Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This rain is threatening, but it's holding out, namely because today is Danny Nicole's birthday. So I wish a happy birthday to my beautiful, soon-to-be pediatric nurse, Danny, who's on her first cruise. Thank God her parents are there to supervise. And I hope you have a great day. And thanks for sending your aunt the pictures. They are magnificent, and you guys are fantastic. But this show is going to really be fantastic, too, because we have the author of one of my picks for 2017, Just Reviews, knows that she can pick anything she wants for her reviews site. Bring her home. The author, David Bell, is here. And we're going to talk about this character that's really tenacious and persistent. His name is Bill Price, and his 15-year-old daughter, a Summer, and her best friend Haley disappear. And if you think I'm going to tell you the rest on the back cover, think again. We're going to let David tell you. Good morning. How you doing?
Hey, Fran. How are you?
I'm doing good today. So far.
Well, that's
this is,
good.
This is fun. I actually love doing this. So for the people that are listening on my Facebook wall, and there are people that are liking and saying they're going to listen later or listening now, I don't know how, but they are if they manage. Tell us a little bit about the plot and how you devised it.
Well, the story is about Bill Price, like you said, and right before the book starts, his daughter Summer and her best friend Haley disappear. And in the very first chapter, Bill has been called to the hospital, and all he's been told is that they have found Summer. He doesn't know the circumstances of how they found her, but he just knows that they found her. Mm-hmm. And so when he gets to the hospital, he is told that Summer was found in a local park, and she was severely beaten. And she has serious injuries, possibly injuries that will cause permanent damage. They don't know how bad these injuries are. And then he finds out as well that Haley was also found, but Haley was dead at the scene. So Bill's immediate concern is the health of his daughter and finding out what happened to her, but she is in a coma and she cannot tell him what happened or where she was or why she ended up here. So at the time he most needs to be able to talk to her and communicate with her, she's unable to communicate. So Bill has to take it upon himself to try to find out what really happened to these two girls and why it happened.
Well, what got me frustrated, because I've been to the emergency rooms with my mom before she died, and I know how it feels. Why didn't the hospital staff pay attention to him when they realized who he was there, why he was there, and finally hear him? And that would drive me crazy. I mean, you know, you go to an emergency room, somebody's there, you tell them who you are, and then the nurses just ignore you. That wouldn't hold well. How come they did that?
Well, I think we've all had the experience of feeling small when something big is happening to us.
Yeah.
You know, we can have that experience going to the DMV, we can have that experience, you know, trying to get the IRS or the cable company on the phone. And so so I think that's what Bill is going through, that his problems to him are, of course, the center of the world. And we all think that. When something happens to us, we think this is the most important thing in the world. But obviously everybody around you has problems as well. So when he goes into the hospital and is attempting to find out where his daughter is, he's having that experience where he's navigating that world where everybody is dealing with their own problems, and he kind of gets lost in all of that. And I think, you know, you mentioned being in the hospital and being in the emergency room. We've probably all had some experience with that, whether it was with aging parents or ourselves or whatever, where you go to the emergency room and you have to wait, or you get put off, or you get put in a room and they say, well, someone's going to come in and talk to you, and then you have to wait. And those are just the most agonizing moments of someone's life when you're there, but you just don't know what is really going on. And so the story starts with that, just because it's a very high tension, high pressure situation for Bill to be in, and it's pushing. He's already been pushed to his limit, but then that pushes him a little further past his limit, is having to deal with that in the hospital.
Yeah, that is hard, and it does get frustrating when they ignore you. But when the nurses finally say, aha, maybe we should recognize that Bill is there, why does he have to deal with the police first? They didn't let him see his daughter. They had to deal with the police first. That's even more frustrating.
Well, I think that from the point of view of the police, when they're trying to solve a crime like this, they want to get the information as fast as possible because they want to get to the information when it's freshest in people's minds. And so the sooner they talk to someone, the sooner they can go out and do the rest of their job. So, that's why the police talk to him first, to kind of let him know what's going on, but also to ask him some questions. You know, that Summer is found in this park, in this town, and this park does not have a great reputation. This park is a place where there are some homeless people living there. There have been some drug problems in this park. And so from the detective's point of view, the detective is wondering, does this have something to do with why Summer was there? So he needs to know, did your daughter hang out in this park? Why would she be found here? And, of course, Bill doesn't know. He says, I told her to stay away from that park. There's no reason she would be there. I think the police have that. Again, it's kind of like everybody has their job to do. Everybody has their desire. Bill wants to see his daughter. A nurse is tending to all these people. The cop is trying to solve the crime. Everybody has something that is motivating them the most. And it's all benevolent. They're all good things, but they don't. Some of them contradict each other. Bill's desire to see his daughter is stopped by the cop's desire to learn information about the case first. So it's kind of like just holding that back for a few chapters before Bill finally gets to see Summer and know what's going on, exactly what's going on with her.
Oh, wow, I know. And that's what makes it even harder. Because when you don't know something, you call to the emergency room, when you walk into a hospital and you're not sure, it's even scarier until you know. And even when you do know, sometimes it's horrible. So when he sees Summer, that she's so badly injured, how does he react? And how does this bring to light the fact that something happened to his wife a long time ago? And how did this hurt his relationship with Summer?
Yeah, what you find out when Bill is in the goes into the hospital is that he has already been through this, because about a year and a half earlier, Bill's wife, Summer's mother, died in an accident at home. So he has just fairly recently been through this kind of loss. He's been in the hospital. He's had to sit in the room and have a doctor come in and give him bad news. So going into the hospital on this day naturally brings all that back up for him, that they've already been through this. When he finally gets to see Summer and sees the severity of her injuries, the one thing that he can cling to is the fact that she is alive. That for 2 days when she was missing, she's been gone. This is, I believe, on Monday, and she's been gone since Saturday. So for 2 days, he hasn't known where she was at all. And you can imagine a parent not knowing where their child is for 48 hours. So he has been able to imagine every scenario, including the worst scenario, that she might be dead. So when he sees her and she's this severely injured, the one thing he can cling to, the one positive he can take away, is she is still alive. That that it's not the absolute worst he has imagined during these 2 days. She is alive, and as long as she's alive, there's hope that she's going to get better. There's hope that that they can find out what happened. And he kind of accepts, as I think any parent would have to accept, he accepts that her recovery may be long. She may have permanent injuries. This may be a lifelong issue dealing with her mentally, physically, everything. But he clings to that life preserver, that is, that she's still alive. And as long as she's alive, there's hope for the future. So that's kind of just the tiny little glimmer of hope at the beginning of the story there.
Oh, wow. So when the police get him, the police talk to him, and it brings back an incident that happened in the past. How does he react? He got really upset, and I don't blame him.
You're talking about the time that the police were called on him?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
What you find out fairly early in the book is that when Summer's mother died, when Bill's wife died, naturally, this is a horrible thing for both of them to go through, that Bill has lost his wife and Summer has lost her mother, and that loss changes the dynamic of the relationship between Bill and Summer. That before Julia died, Bill had kind of, for lack of a better word, maybe outsourced a little of some of the things with raising Summer to Julia. He admits that he didn't always know who her friends were, and he didn't always know everything that was going on in Summer's life. He kind of let Julia handle the day-to-day emotional friend kind of stuff that was going on with Summer. With Julia gone, now Bill has to change his relationship to his daughter, and Bill has to start knowing these things that he did not know before. So what we find out is that he and Summer have not been getting along very well over this previous year and a half since Julia died, and that there's been a lot of tension between them, which is mostly pretty normal between parents and teens. I mean, you know, parents and teenagers just don't always get along. And so Summer has been acting out and being rebellious. But there was one incident when Summer stayed out past her curfew, and when she came home, she and Bill kind of got into it, and Bill grabbed her by the arm. And after he did that, Summer actually called the police on him. And the police came to the house, and everything, you know, Summer was like, oh, I shouldn't have called the police, and it's okay, and everything was fine. But now that Summer has disappeared and then been found beaten, when this bit of information comes up about the police having been called on Bill, it naturally makes Bill look like something of a suspect in his own daughter's disappearance and the crime committed against her. As we all know, a huge percentage of crimes like this are perpetrated by people we know. You're much more likely to be attacked by someone you know rather than a complete stranger. And so Bill is naturally a suspect from the very beginning. And then when this little bombshell drops that he had not told the police about originally, this makes him look even worse. And so it's a low point for Bill early in the story when he finds the police questioning him and also having to relive this moment that he really regrets. He really regrets losing his cool and laying his hands on his daughter. But it happened, and he has to live with it.
I know, and that's the hard part. So then we meet Haley's parents and the pastor. So why does Bill allow them to see Summer? Why do they allow them to see Summer? Why do they let them to come in?
Well, I think that Bill, he feels, obviously, when what happens is they're in the hospital and Summer is in a coma and Haley is dead, and Haley's mother and the pastor from their church come to the to where Summer is and to offer their support. And so naturally now Bill has come face to face with Haley's mother, and Haley's mother has just found out that her child is dead. So Bill is trying to be sympathetic and empathetic in this situation, and understand that, I mean, of anybody on earth who can understand what Haley's mother is going through, it's Bill, because Bill has been going through the same thing. And so Haley's mother and the pastor want to go in and see Summer, and Bill allows them to, even though Bill has negative feelings about religion, that as a result of Julia dying, and everything, he has some negative feelings about religion. He feels like it's hard for him to believe in God or go to church when awful things have happened to him. How do you make sense of that? But I think it's mostly just sympathy for Haley's family, and thinking that maybe this will bring some comfort to Haley's mother to at least see that Summer is alive. And so he allows Haley's mother and the pastor to come into Summer's room, and then they pray over Summer, which makes Bill feel a little uncomfortable because that's just kind of not his thing to do the whole praying thing. But he allows that to happen, and I think he's just trying to be sympathetic and a little open to trying to connect a little bit with Haley's mother, who has just suffered this terrible loss of her own.
I know, that makes it hard even more. And then they go and they tell him, you know, they do something nice, but that's beside the point. So when he finally gets to sit with Haley, something triggers off some red flags in his head. And he doesn't quite know what it is, but she's trying to tell him something. And then what makes Paige, her sister, come? And having her there, things really change. So how come she sees something that he doesn't see?
Well, Paige is an interesting character. Paige is Bill's younger sister. And so they have, you know, I'm one of those people who is not very good on a day-to-day basis with staying in touch with people. You know, I'm not one of those people who, like, I have siblings, but I'm not one of those people who, you know, is like, I'm always calling people on the phone and checking in and saying hi, whatever. I'm not good at that. and maybe lots of people are not good at that, that you just kind of let things go and, you know, oh, I'll see you at Thanksgiving, or I'll text you on your birthday, and that's kind of what you do. And so Bill and Paige have that kind of relationship where they were close as teenagers and they grew up together, but they haven't been particularly close as adults, and they don't talk all the time. Bill is in Kentucky and Paige lives up in Ohio. And but he has called Paige when this has happened because he didn't know who else to reach out to. And he has turned to his sister. And so his sister has dropped everything and come down to the hospital to be with Bill. And so so they have a pretty typical sibling relationship where they love each other and they care about each other a great deal, but they also have a fair amount of baggage left over from their childhood. Nothing earth-shattering or horrible, but just the kind of the typical thing where you know, Paige will say, oh, you know, mom and dad let you get away with everything, and they always treated you differently, and this and that, and so they just have their little skirmishes, as siblings do, but they care about each other and support each other a great deal. And Paige ends up being a character who, she tries to be a restraining influence on Bill at times when he
mm-hmm.
when he's losing his cool or when he is doing something impulsive. She kind of steps in and tries to be a moderating influence on him. But then there are other times where Paige is the one who can ask the uncomfortable question and who can push the story forward in ways that Bill can't push the story forward. So they have an interesting dynamic between them throughout the story. And I really like writing that sibling relationship because I think anybody who has a sibling can probably relate to that dynamic that goes on between these two people.
I agree. Well, my sister died a few years ago, and she would call me every morning at 7 o'clock. Because
oh,
my
really?
Mom had
yeah.
Alzheimer's. Oh, yeah, every day. And I knew. I said, Marcia, I gave mom her medicine. Seriously, I didn't forget. And we would go through this whole thing, and it was just funny. And then when she died, sometimes in the morning, I look at my phone like, why didn't it ring? Whereas my brother, you're right, he texts me on my birthday, which is his birthday. That's why he remembers. And and he reaches out once every, like blue moon. So I said this to him. I said, our birthdays are coming up. It's on a Saturday. Do you think maybe I could view you this year? So we'll see.
Right, right.
Yeah, I made the whole hotel reservation, but you never know because he's always busy. So you never know. So who are the three boys
that
both Haley and Summer were involved with these boys that night? And, of course, everybody blames it on them because they didn't read the book. So why didn't Summer go with Haley, and what would have changed if she went along with the group?
Well, there are these – what we find out pretty quickly is that there are these Haley and Summer were friends with a group of boys from the high school. And and so it's, they're all 15, 16 years old. So Bill doesn't really know the nature of the relationship between these kids. Are they just friends or were they romantically involved? And I think that's fairly typical when kids are like 15, 16 years old. It's a little hard to tell. Is anybody dating? Are they because they just go out in groups and you're like, who might be dating who, or are they really, whatever. So there's that whole like blurry teenage complicated, love stuff going on that these kids are all friends, but they might be more than friends and no one really knows. And so these boys who have kind of been in some trouble before are also suspects because they were close to Haley and Summer. And pretty early on, the police have to ask Bill these very uncomfortable questions about Summer's sex life. The police are trying to find out any lead possible, so they have to ask Bill, was she dating these boys? Was she sexually active? Was she doing this? Was she doing that? And Bill is horrified to have to talk about these things and to have to think about these things. And pretty early on when Paige, Bill's sister, shows up, she reveals something that she got a phone call from Summer about 6 months or so before this attack, in which Summer was asking Paige's advice about birth control. And so Bill is realizing pretty early on he doesn't know everything that's been going on in his daughter's life. That Summer has had a whole life with these boys and with her friends that he was not tuned into. And to not go too far into gender stereotypes, but not unusual for a father to be in that position with a 15-year-old daughter. And here's a daughter, a 15-year-old girl, whose mother has died. So who does she turn to ask these questions? She talks to a counselor at school. She talks to her aunt. But it might be a little weird for her to talk to her dad about this stuff. So these boys are suspects in the case because they have been close to these girls, and it comes out in the course of the book that there are other reasons to suspect these boys. They've been involved in some very questionable activities. And what we don't know is, was this kind of just like boys will be boys kinds of things that they've been involved in? Or is there something more sinister that they've been involved in? And is it something more sinister that could have led to this attack on Summer and Haley? And so that's something that comes out as the book goes along, is how serious were the problems with these young guys in this town?
I know. If she's anything like my mother, she knew exactly what I was doing every minute of every day. And she even had a schedule. And she timed me. And if I was late, late 5 minutes, I would get grounded. So I knew how to call. So maybe Bill has to do the same thing with Summer. You just never know.
Well, it's interesting, too, because the kids today have the cell phones, and so it's pretty easy in one way to know where they are at all times, but you know, kids can find ways around that. You know, we found ways around that when we were young, and kids are always going to try to find ways around their parents. So it makes it very complicated for Bill to learn these things that he doesn't really want to know necessarily, but he has to know. He has to know everything that's going on, because that's the only way to get to solve this mystery.
Yeah, I know. It is the only way to know. And parents, I think, need to be more aware. I mean, you don't have to monitor their every second, but they really should call in when you tell them to. And I learned that a long time ago. And actually, it's funny, because if I didn't, that would have been the end of everything. And that's okay. So Paige hesitates to tell Bill that someone is watching his house, and that the someone could be, take a chance encounter to go after this person, not knowing who the person is? Because he's reckless, unpredictable, and even Detective Hawkins seems to include him in more than most would in an investigation. He seems to be, you know, finding out things that he doesn't. So why does Paige tell him that there's somebody there? And why does the detective feel that he should tell him more stuff than anybody would know?
Well, what happens is that Bill will go out and look around and try to learn different things that are happening. And like you said, sometimes he is reckless. He's so driven by this desire to know what really happened to Summer that he will go and do things that he probably shouldn't do. And so what happens is, when he's out one night, a car comes cruising by the house as though it's watching the house or spying on the house in some way, and is thinking about stopping but doesn't really stop. And this happens when Paige is home alone. And naturally it freaks her out, because the person or persons who committed this crime against Summer and Haley has not been caught. And so if someone in your family has been the victim of a crime, and that person is on the loose, and someone is kind of hanging around the house in a strange way, that would naturally freak you out. So Paige is freaked out by this, by seeing this car come around, and she tells Bill about it. And so the first time Bill sees this car, he runs after it and is not able to, the car does not stop, and he's not able to find out who it is. Eventually you will find out who is the person in this car and what role this person has to play in the unraveling of all the mysteries in the book. But I think that is just there because it adds a nice element of creepiness in the story, and it shows how determined Bill is to find out what's going on, that he is not someone who's just going to sit there and sit back and wait for answers to come to him. He is going to go try to find these answers. Bill has a lot of flaws, like all of us, and he's reckless and impulsive. But the true redeeming quality he has is that he will go to the ends of the earth for his daughter, that he so loves his daughter and is so protective of her and determined to find out what happened to her that he will do anything to find out what happened, including putting himself in jeopardy, physical jeopardy, a couple of times when he goes and does impulsive things. But he is very determined to find out what really happened. You were asking about the police and why the police.
Yeah. Why do they help? The guy sort of like comes, you know, he tells him anything he wants. It's really weird.
Well, I think this is a smaller community, and they haven't had a lot of violent crimes like this or serious crimes like this. So the detective and Bill form, you know, it's an uneasy kind of relationship between these two people. There's a little between Bill and the detective. It's somewhat adversarial in that Bill wants information. Bill is constantly pushing this detective to do more and more, and the detective is bound by obviously the law and procedures and things like that that he has to go by. He can't, the detective cannot be as emotionally involved or as reckless or as determined as Bill wants him to be. So there's this conflict between the two of them. But at the same time, the detective has a lot of empathy for Bill. He understands what Bill is going through. He understands how difficult this situation is. And so they have this weird love-hate friendship relationship going on. And so I think that the times when the Detective Hawkins, maybe shares more information with Bill than you would ordinarily expect a detective to do, I think it's just that this detective has a lot of empathy for him and understands the position that Bill is in and is trying desperately to help and is maybe trying to give Bill a little bit of information, hoping that will satisfy Bill and maybe shut him up for a few minutes even. But of course, the more he hands out to Bill, the more Bill wants. So kind of in this, these two men are forced to be close to each other and are forced to spend a lot of time with each other. And they end up getting on each other's nerves and they end up driving each other crazy. But the combination of the two of them with other characters in the book drives the story forward and leads them to the answers that we eventually want to get at the end of the book. So it's just really kind of an interesting dynamic when two people who are complete strangers, this detective and Bill, are forced to work together and are forced to learn to communicate with each other. And they kind of become in a way like friends or like siblings who have this weird dynamic going on between them. They don't have any choice about being together, and they drive each other nuts. But it somehow it manages to work and be productive at some point.
Well, there are several characters I think I'm going to leave out because we don't want to give away anything. So when Bill approaches Clinton and Brandon, and he didn't exactly say hello very nicely. Why does he want them arrested?
Well, when Bill finds out that these boys in the high school have been involved with some other questionable activities in the town, what Bill finds out pretty early on is that it's possible that Summer and Haley were going to see these boys on the day they disappeared. So Bill naturally flies off the handle and says to the police, to Detective Hawkins, well, go arrest them, go talk to them, go turn their lives upside down, find out whatever it is that they know. And And, of course, the detective cannot fly off the handle. He has to, and he says this to Bill, first of all, they're teenagers, and so, you know, anybody who's a suspect is obviously protected by the Constitution, and they have rights and they have procedures. But especially when you're dealing with a teenager, a juvenile suspect or person of interest, you can't just go storming in there and treat them the same way you would treat an adult or the same way you would treat someone of a certain age. So the detective is trying to explain this to Bill. You know, I can't just go storming in there and do whatever I want to these kids. I have to, you know, I have to talk to their parents, and they have to, you have to do it this way. But Bill is basically, because Bill is so distraught, he's saying, you know, civil rights be damned, go in there and just arrest these kids and find out what they know. So again, that's one of those points of conflict between Bill and the detective. And Bill at times takes matters into his own hands and goes and attempts to make contact with these kids outside of the channels of the police department, because he thinks maybe if he talks to them directly, or if he talks to people who know them directly, he can learn something that the police have not learned yet. And so that's, again, that's an example of Bill stepping outside the bounds of what he should be doing, but he is so motivated by needing to know what happened to his daughter that he will go and do these things, and probably should not be doing them, probably should not be talking to teenagers this way, but he does it because he needs to know and he can't stop himself.
That is true. And the fact that he didn't get arrested, he's very lucky. So
he is very lucky
that
because
somebody else would have been in jail, for obstruction of justice or something, So I was waiting for that to happen, and I'm saying, you know, I know he's just aggravated, but he may be going too far. So he finds out that there's a counselor in school that work with Summer. And what does she tell him? Because he gets the feeling that they felt that maybe she ran away. So what is it that would cause her to run away, and what did she tell him?
Well, Bill knows that there's a counselor at the high school who Summer is very close to. And especially in the wake of Julia, Summer's mother, dying, Summer has been talking to this counselor at school, and they've formed a very close relationship. And so Bill goes to the school to try to talk to this counselor and to say, look, can you tell me anything? Can you tell me what's going on? What did I miss? What do I need to know? And what the counselor reveals to Bill is that when Julia died, obviously Summer was very distraught, but she seems to have moved on. She seemed to be moving on appropriately from her mother's death. She seemed to be dealing with it pretty well until very recently, until maybe a month or so before the attack, before Summer's disappearance. All of a sudden, Summer started talking to the counselor about her mother again, and she seemed very distraught. And she hinted at maybe wanting to run away. And so the counselor doesn't really know why there was this new set of emotions about the mother's death. It could just be normal grieving. I mean, grieving doesn't follow a neat pattern, you know, that people can feel like they moved on and then they can have, for lack of a better word, I'm putting it in air quotes, but you can't see me. They can have a relapse of grief, right? Where you can think you're going along just fine, and then something happens, and all of a sudden, boom, all the emotions come back down on that person again. So it could just be that. It could just be that Summer is just having these emotions churn up again, or maybe something else happened that Summer was not ready to talk about yet, that she didn't talk about to the counselor, that she didn't talk about with Bill, that apparently she didn't tell anybody. But maybe something happened to bring the emotions of her mother's death back up all over again? And does it have something to do with the fact, like, is there a link between these emotions coming back up and Summer's disappearance and the attack? So we don't know that as a reader, but that's basically what Bill learns when he goes and talks to this counselor, is that Summer had been talking about her mother more in the days and weeks leading up to the attack. And so for Bill has to try to say to himself, well, what is there a connection between all of these things? Was there something going on with Julia's death that either Summer hadn't dealt with, or that there's just more to the story that he did not know about?
Well, before I forget, because I don't want to forget, on Tuesday, the 21st, the Patricia Hale, the Church of the Holy Child, that was a surprise to me. It was excellent. On the 23rd, All Signs Point to Murder. On September 6th, the one and only John Land and Fabrizio Boccardi will talk about their new book. On the 12th, E.Z. Rinsky, The Binding. You want to read that. That was absolutely a must read. And for those of us that are educators like myself, on the 13th, the author of Colorblind is there. What happens when a black teacher is put in an all-white school and she's severely ostracized and isolated and made to feel that she's a terrible person when she's really a great teacher, and one student proves everybody wrong. On the 26th, Andrea Kane, A Face to Die For. And on the 27th, to round up September, like you wouldn't believe, I Know a Secret, Tess Gerritsen will be here and take center stage. And that is just September. October gets even more exciting, if anything could get more exciting. And those are the books that I would suggest from those authors that you read. And, of course, David Bell, bring her home. I don't know why you're not, ordering them while I'm speaking on my phone here. And so what happened? Yeah, that, I tell you, that was like, that book is so fantastic. I can't wait to read the next one. So why is Bill relentless to speak to the person that's in the bed? And what does she reveal about Summer the day that they were attacked?
Why is he so relentless to speak to who?
Well, why does he go into the hospital room and realize that something is wrong? And why does he want to speak to this person that's actually in the hospital bed?
Oh, well, Bill is trying to find out anything possible that he can about what has happened to Summer. And the more he learns, the more he realizes. I mean, initially, Bill is thinking naturally that this is a crime that was probably perpetrated by a stranger or someone he doesn't really know that well. As the story goes along, Bill starts to understand that the answers to what happened to Summer and the answers to almost everything that's going on here are probably closer to him than he really realized. As the story goes along, he is coming back closer and closer to home as he starts asking all these questions. So I think that's the big thing that Bill is learning as the book unfolds, is that he thought this was going to be some, distant thing. And I think the really terrifying thing for Bill, and maybe for everybody, is when you learn that that people who you thought you knew well are not who they seem to be. And that's what he's kind of figuring out as the story goes along, that the people closest to him have been keeping secrets from him, and so things are getting more and more complicated for him in that way. He's basically having to reevaluate almost everything in his life because he's figuring this out as he goes along.
Well, I'm not going to give away anything more. Bill Price is tough, angry, and he can't deal with a lot of the issues, so he seems to push everybody away. Paige wants to help him every step of the way, and yet, for some reason, at times he tells her to go home. When he reason for he resists and what he realizes about Summer and Haley and the situation in general. So why does he want his sister to leave? Because she's only there to help, and she means well, but yet she could be overpowering just like him.
Yeah, I think Bill is one of those people who at times he doesn't know how to get out of his own way. He has a very difficult time letting his guard down with people. He has a difficult time accepting help from people. I think he has a very difficult time admitting his weaknesses and his vulnerabilities. And so with his sister, they have this constant push-pull where she's trying to help him, and they'll connect and they'll make some progress, but then eventually some of his negative qualities will reassert themselves, and he'll want to push her away. And also because Paige is the character who wants to ask the uncomfortable questions that Bill doesn't want to think about. And so when she pushes some of these uncomfortable questions, his natural response is to push her away and to say he doesn't want to deal with that, he can't think about that. So I mean, I think that's really what's going on. That's the dynamic. That's why he's constantly trying to push her away a little bit, is because it's just really difficult for him to let his guard down and be vulnerable and be open, even with a person like his sister who, as you said correctly, means well, wants to help him. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Paige is someone who doesn't always know exactly the right time to bring something up, doesn't quite always know when to say the right thing to Bill. So it's just a lot of that sibling conflict that goes on between them. They, you know, Paige frequently makes reference to things that happened in their childhood, and it's kind of like that when you have a sibling, that it doesn't matter how much time has passed, your sibling might say, yeah, but remember when we were 5 years old and you stole my red truck or whatever? And it's like, really, 40 years later, you want to bring up the thing that I did when we were 5 years old? But those things don't go away. So I think that weird dynamic between Paige and Bill is what kind of leads him to push her away sometimes.
Well, there's a new character that we're safe to bring up. if you notice, I left out somebody, and I'm going to leave that person out, because then, I realized that I wrote it in the questions. I said, no, I'm going to leave that out. So who is Tina Everett, and why does Bill find himself at the front door wanting to talk to her mother? And who is there and takes him outside, and why? Why does he go there?
Well, Tina is another friend of Summer's and Haley's. And these three girls have an interesting dynamic because they were all three closer friends when they were younger. And then as the kids got older, and you know this kind of happens, Tina kind of fell by the wayside of their friendship. So this trio of kids really just became a duo of kids. It became Summer and Haley. And there wasn't as much room for Tina in their life. So Tina has kind of fallen by the wayside. Sometimes she's around, sometimes she's not. And Summer and Haley kind of see her as, you know, the third wheel, the hanger-on, the whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, but nevertheless, when this happens to Summer and Haley, and Bill is trying to think, well, who might actually know something, he goes to Tina, because Tina might know stuff that's going on with these girls and with all these kids in the school, because she's the same age. So that leads Bill to going to Tina's house and talking to Tina and Tina's mother. And naturally, Tina's mother is a little protective and put off by this man showing up at the house saying that he needs to talk to her when the police have already been talking to Tina about what's going on. So Tina is you know, kind of on the fringe of this friend group, and there are times during the book when she brings information to Bill or to the police that really does help the investigation. And so she kind of plays a larger role in the story, even though she's not a close friend of the girls anymore. So she's kind of an interesting character who's sometimes on the fringes of the story, but sometimes finds herself in the middle of everything that's going on. And so it's also just kind of, you know, an interesting commentary on the way those friendships change as we get older. As you go from like junior high to high school, some people just kind of fall away and go down a different path. And that's kind of what's happened with Tina.
Well, I read the reader's guide, and I picked out several questions before we close that I thought were very interesting. This just proves that I read the whole book, everybody.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I read everything.
Well, if someone's in a book club, you've got the reader's guide right there.
I have the reader. I read the reader's guide at the end after I read the book, and there were some questions that I thought were really good for those people that have, you know, book clubs. I am the book club, they tell me. And
right.
I'm a speed reader, but I read every word. And my mother made me read 10 books a week and take notes, so that when my sister-in-law gets you a book, she's gonna have to pick through the little notes on the side and the underlines.
Oh, okay, good.
And my total destruction. That means the more notes I have and the more destruction, the better the book. So that's too bad on whoever gets it next. So Tina and Brandon did not have anything to do with the crimes and the other boys were accused of, and did yet. They kept secrets and showed poor judgment. In real life, would they have been prosecuted for their roles in the crimes they committed?
Yeah, that's an interesting question that I had to think about. I mean, I think, yeah, they're probably going to find themselves in some trouble because they knew things, and they were both in positions to maybe stop certain things from happening, or they could have brought information to the police sooner than they did. So I think it puts them it's a complicated moral position to be in, because they're friends with these kids and people who may have done worse things. But if you know about a crime and you don't do anything about it, or you're slow to bring information forward, in a way you're every bit as guilty as the people who did the crime. So I think they're going to come into some kind of legal jeopardy. They're juveniles, so it's not, you know, like whatever obstruction of justice or whatever kind of charge hindering an investigation that might be there might not be as severe as it would be for an adult. But I think that they have to bear some responsibility and culpability for what happened, because they didn't intercede as quickly as maybe they could have. So I think there's some fault that falls on them.
Okay, I'm going to ask the next question, but leave out part of it, because I'm not giving any. No, you notice I didn't say what was on the back cover of the book. I think that everybody has to read that for themselves. I didn't do that. Yeah. Candy is Haley's mother, and when you speak to her and hear her talk, she seemed to imply that someone was a bad influence on Haley, but in reality, I would disagree about that. No one forces you to do the wrong thing unless you choose to, and then you have to deal with the fallout or consequences. So if Haley could speak, or anything he could speak, or her mother would speak, why would she say that someone was a bad influence on her?
Well, I think what I was getting at there is that usually when you have these really close friendships between kids, and I think this applies to boys or girls, usually one kid is a little more the leader is a little stronger personality than the other one. And so in the Haley-Summer dynamic, Summer was always seen as the more dominant, as the stronger personality, as the leader between the two kids, and Haley was more of the follower. So in the immediate aftermath of the attack, and when Haley is dead, Haley's mother comes to talk to Bill, she says, you know, she basically implies that none of this would have happened if Summer had not led Haley down the wrong path. And part of that, I think, is just grief talking and just a rationalization that someone will say about their child that, oh, my child wouldn't have done this. Someone must have led them astray, or someone must have done something, right? So I think in that moment, it's really just Candy be grieving and just trying to find a way to cope by saying something like that. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a limit to how much you can blame on another person. Just because your friend says, hey, let's go do this, or hey, let's whatever, doesn't mean you have to do it. And part of growing up is becoming strong enough to say no, even to people who are strong personalities and more dominant personalities than you are. And so that's just kind of what I'm getting at there, is that the girls in the book and the boys in the book, each one of those groups has a strong personality that seems to be kind of the ringleader of what's going on with them, and the other kids go along. And so like you said, you have to learn to say no to people. You have to learn to say no, this is not a good idea. And you're still going to be held responsible for yourself. If no one's holding a gun to your head to do things, then you're responsible for what you do. And so I think it's something that we all have to learn as we grow up. We have to learn to say no to people, and we have to learn to say, I'm not going to be easily led or manipulated by people who might have a stronger personality than your own. And so that's kind of what that whole dynamic with the kids doing that gets into. And you even see some of that with the adults. So I think that's something we deal with at all ages in a way.
Well, I think that teens need to read this book, seriously, because I hear it from some of my nieces. One niece, she said, well, my friends do it. I said, if your friends took a gun and shoot somebody, would you do the same thing? Or do your friends run your life? Or do they just define who you are? Or are you the kind of person that says no when it's wrong and try to get through it? Sometimes it's like talking to a wall because they want to be popular.
Right.
Being popular doesn't make you do the wrong thing at times. So two more questions. Summer and Bill had many fallouts after Julia died. And I'm going to change the wording of the question in the book. Why doesn't he realize that it might have been that she just missed her mother? And do you think the relationship between them would have been different had Julia not been killed, not died?
Yeah, I think the relationship would have been different. I think that Bill is adjusting to being a single parent. And I don't think, until this happens to Summer, I don't think he has fully, I mean, the weird thing is that he's dealing with his own grief, and then he has to deal with being a single parent to a teenage girl. All of this is happening at the same time. And address his daughter's grief. So there's this whole bunch of stuff going on, and all these things that Bill is trying to juggle. And so it's difficult for him to do that. It would be difficult for anyone to do that. And I don't think when the book opens that Bill has fully taken that on. And I think that what the book is really about for Bill is, by the end of the book, is he fully ready to engage and accept and deal with everything he has to deal with? Is he now fully involved in his daughter's life? Is he now fully committed to playing this whole single parent role that he has to play. Is he now fully ready to understand everything about his daughter's life, everything about his own life? I think that's the question for Bill that he has to answer as the book goes along. And so yeah, of course, if Julia had not died, then Bill would not have to do these things. But I think it's been good for him, as painful as the things that happened to him in the book are, I think it's good for him to have to go on this journey and to have to develop these other parts of himself and these other parts of his relationship with his daughter that he would not have developed if this hadn't happened. So I think that's the real emotional journey for Bill throughout the course of the book, is finally saying, yeah, I've got to handle all this stuff. I'm the only one here to do it, and I have to accept it. And as difficult as it is, I have to go through this. And that's what he does.
Well, the title says Bring Her Home, and has many meanings besides hoping to bring his daughter home. It's like bringing Julia back to life, too. That's the impression I got. What is the true meaning of the title? That's what I think it means to me.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. There's just the physical, literal, his daughter is missing and he needs to bring her home. But there are all the emotional ramifications of this, dealing with the death of Bill's wife, dealing with emotionally bringing Summer home, not just physically bringing her home, but emotionally bringing her home, because Bill and Summer have been a little checked out from each other, and Summer has been a little checked out emotionally. She's a teenager, so she's been, you know, a little disengaged from her dad and her home life. So it's about that emotion too, that let's get all these people on the same page. Let's make sure all these people know what's going on with each other and are actually in the same place physically and emotionally. So yeah, there are a couple of meanings to bring her home that you can figure out in the course of the story.
Okay, one last question that I'm going to combine with another question. I write as I'm doing this. If Bill could talk to readers right now, what did he learn from this whole journey? And will he ever learn to table his anger? Or will he be able, or will he go off, you know, the beaten path the next time something happens with anybody? So if Bill could talk to readers, what would he tell them that he learned or that parents should learn from reading this book about dealing with teenagers?
Well, I think he had to learn that he has to know everything about his daughter's life, that he has to be able to accept the difficult things alongside the good things, that he has to be open to all sides of his child's personality, that maybe before the book starts, he was only seeing one portion of who his daughter was. He has to see everything that's going on with his daughter and understand that. So I think that's the big thing that he's figuring out. I think he does learn in the course of the book that he has to be able to grow up a little bit and put aside his impulsive behavior, his impulse to anger. I think by the end of the book, he manages to try to find a little peace of mind, that his daughter's welfare is more important than anything else. So I think those are the things that he is wrestling with. And I think, and readers can make up their own mind about this, I think and I hope he will be better in the future. He will have some better understanding of his daughter and himself as he goes forward, and that there's hope that he's going to be a better person as a result of everything that's happened to him. So I see it optimistically. I hope readers do too, because I want readers to feel a little bit of hope when they get to the end of the story. I think so. I think someone like Bill can change, and I think he will be changed by these experiences.
Okay, and one last question, because of course, knowing Fran, we went over the hour, but so what? What is next for you? Where can we learn more about you, and when am I getting the next book?
Well, my next book will be out next summer in July, and it's called Somebody's Daughter, and it's about a guy who's he's married, and he's having a nice, normal, suburban life, and one day someone knocks on the door, and he goes to the door, and it is his ex-wife, who he hasn't seen or heard from in a decade. He had a starter marriage in his 20s, and she has shown up at his doorstep, and she says, "I need your help. My daughter is missing, and you need to help me get her back." And he says, "One, I didn't even know you had a daughter, and two, I haven't seen you in 10 years. Why do you want my help with this?" And she says, "Because she's your daughter, and she was conceived right before we split up. So you've got to help me find her." And so if he goes along to help his ex-wife find this missing child, he runs the risk of jeopardizing his current marriage and current life. He doesn't really know that this child even exists. He doesn't even know if the child is his. He doesn't know if maybe his ex-wife is the one who harmed the child. So there are lots of complicated questions as he goes along and does this. So that will be out in July. So that's next. So yeah, you have to wait for that until next summer.
Well, I hope that if I email Lori, I'll remind myself, I'll just stick it in my phone, remind myself that you have it. And also, there's another one that says, since she went away, that the two chapters are everybody at the end of the book. And I want to thank you so much. This has been great, and I love this book. And, yes, I think everybody, you know, Labor Day is the reason why you have, you know, family and everything. Well, the person that's hosting the Labor Day party, bring some books. Seriously. I mean, I
yeah,
would.
It's a great
yeah,
fast
I agree.
Read.
And it's going to rain today. So rather than sitting in front of the television and listening to the news and getting aggravated about what's going on in our world, I would rather sit down and personally read a book. And I'm going to right now, because Fran has about 50 books to review, and there are 6 of them, maybe 7 that I started, that I'm hoping to finish this week alone. So seriously,
okay,
I want to thank you
luck.
So very much. I want to thank you so much. And I do panel shows a lot, and I'm doing one on November 9th, and this is exciting, with FBI agent Michael Tabman, police detective Bruce Coffin, civil lawyer and criminal lawyer Larry Thompson, and the one and only D.P. Lyle. And we're going to talk about how to present forensic evidence in a book. How do you write a crime scene the right way, because they're all written all wrong half the time? And what happens when the FBI takes over the case, and how do you present it in court? And I'm going to try to do another one on if the characters in your book could speak, how would they change the plot?
Oh, okay. And yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, I do crazy things. You never know what I'm going to do. So if I think there's something that might interest you, I will let you know. And you just never
yes,
know when I'm going to do it. But thank you so very much. I appreciate this.
Okay, thank
Everybody,
you.
Everybody, the sun is not shining. The sun is starting to come out. And once again, happy birthday, Danny Nick. I am so proud of you. And thank you, David, for everything. Everybody have a nice day. And bye.